Chapter 11. Amreel and I went through the southern tunnels and headed toward the Dolrath territory. I had on the ring Sagor gave me, but I didn't want to try my luck testing it. So as the red-skinned woman and I came to a passageway with the spike trap, we opted to just avoid the pressure plate. Then, in the corridor with the tripwire, the Zinkari woman and I chose to carefully step over it. But when we came to the room with the gargoyles and the southern iron door, I decided to try out my new trinket. "I'll go first," I said to Amreela from the doorway leading to the long, narrow room. "As long as we go one at a time, it's not so bad." The horned woman nodded silently at me, with a set expression, but I knew from the look in her eyes that she was still anxious at the thought of crossing this room. Still, I turned and took a step forward, onto the stones that played major notes. But the notes didn't play and didn't set off the fire-breathing gargoyles. I took another step, and there was no sound except for my footfall. Then I turned and looked back at Amreela, who seemed just as surprised as me.
"I guess Saga's ring works,"
the horned woman shrugged. After we'd both gotten across without incident, I was unlocking the iron door and thought for a moment about how the dwarves' technology worked. I'd assumed it was all mechanical when we'd come through the first time, but if the ring could stop the effects of physical traps, that implied they were at least partly magic. I wished I could go back to the lost dwarves and ask more questions, but I had other shit to do now. Maybe I could take them some kind of peace offering later, after Sagor had healed some. Then the iron door opened, and Amreel and I stepped through into the alcove on the gloom side before we watched the huge metal door swing shut again. "You're familiar with the Dolrath land, right?" I asked the red-skinned woman.
"I cut my first purse in a small village in the eastern caverns of the Dolrath,"
she said with a whimsical smile.
"So, yes."
"Then you know how to get to the Dolrath capital?"
"Yes,"
Amreela said again after a small pause as she looked out through the opening of the alcove.
"The simplest way would be to find the road and follow it to the lake, then turn east. But we'll be going right to where we found the lesser demon."
"Fuck," I groaned. "Well, if we use the headlamp and the flashlight, we can scare off the shadow fucker if we see it."
"It's a plan,"
Amreela sighed. The horned woman and I started through the stark landscape of the Dolrath territory, and as we walked, I wondered what the scene at the lakeshore would look like now that several days had passed. "Do you think anyone has found those gnomes yet?" I asked as we passed a thick mass of spiked vines along the road.
"If they haven't, the beetles will have gotten to them by now,"
the red-skinned woman replied casually. "Beetles?" I repeated with a raised eyebrow.
"Yeah,"
the Zinkari woman said as she idly kicked a loose rock down the dirt path.
"They're scavengers. If no one has found the gnome harvesters, then the beetles will have stripped the bodies of their flesh by now."
"Damn," I swore and my nose wrinkled in disgust. "Well, I'm glad I asked, I guess. At least now I'm prepared for that horrible shit."
"Don't worry,"
Amreela laughed.
"Those gnomes were harvesting crystals, which are valuable. Someone would have come looking for them."
As we approached the lake, the sound of water dripping became clearer, so I turned on my headlamp while Amreela followed suit and turned on the flashlight. I saw the Zinkari woman wince slightly at the bright beam of light in her hand, but then she started to scan the area around the road with the light. I suspected we both felt better off with our lights on, and I hoped it would hold back the shadow creature if we encountered it again. I also noticed something else as we got closer to the lake, the strong, sickly sweet smell of decay. The beams of our lights reflected off the sparkling water of the underground lake, and we could see the crumpled forms of what was left of the dead gnomes. My headlamp fell across the white gleam of a skull, picked clean of all flesh. I was about to ask Amreela if this was the work of the beetles she'd mentioned when a big, lumbering shape scuttled over the body I was looking at. It was almost a yard long and had a thick, black shell with the slightest iridescent sheen to it. "What the fuck?" I shouted as I jumped back involuntarily.
"What is it?"
Amreela demanded in a startled tone. The horned woman shone her light on the back of the armored creature, and it moved to the next body and began to nibble at a tattered bit of flesh still clinging to it.
"It's just a beetle,"
Amreela snorted. "That's not a beetle," I replied with heavy sarcasm. "That's a small tank. What the actual fuck? It's huge. Let's keep going. Those things give me the creeps." Amreela took the lead, and I followed her over a stone bridge at the east end of the lake where it was fed by a river. We tried to move forward as quietly as we could, but stealth was impossible, since we both had bright lights that we were using to sweep the area with. The cavern here was especially rocky around the dirt road, so the horned woman and I were surrounded by large outcroppings, fallen boulders, and patches of ever-present vine growths. There were countless places where the shadow demon could be hiding, and we would never know. That knowledge gave me a pervasive feeling of being watched, and the hair on my arms raised and prickled in response. The memory of the now skeletal gnomes back by the lake didn't help the general feeling of creepiness, but I was glad when the cavern started to open up again. Then we came into an area that was flat and more spacious. There were even a few of the small, scrubby bushes here and there, and I could see the glow of a mushroom growth in the distance.
Oh, this part of the cave feels better,
Amrila said, and voiced what I'd felt as some tension released in my stomach. Yeah, I agreed. The air feels lighter here. How much further is it to the Dolrath city?
It's more of a large encampment than an actual city,
the red-skinned woman replied.
The only permanent building is the chief's meeting house. The rest of the city is all tents. The Dolrath use the meeting house as a central point, but only the chief and their household actually live there.
Huh. I grunted as I thought about the pros and cons of that arrangement. But what about the people who have farms and businesses in the city? Do they not have permanent buildings?
The Dolrath are warriors and hunters.
Amrila shook her head, and the ends of her strawberry blonde hair glinted in the light of my headlamp.
They don't have many tradespeople. They're more content wandering the territory and relying on trade for their livings.
I could see how the Dolrath mindset had shaped Amrila's own thinking. I started to open my mouth to ask another question, but the thought was interrupted as I looked down the road and saw several bodies lying on the dirt path. These were much larger than the gnomes by the lake. Hold up! I hissed and held out a hand for Amrila to stop.
What do you see?
The Zinkari woman asked as she looked down the road, too. There's 6 bodies in the road, I said as I looked around, and the light of my headlamp swept the road and surrounding areas. This cavern was a little more open, but I didn't see any signs of the lesser demon. Still, a tense knot was forming in my stomach, and my heart rate had jumped up a notch. I didn't feel the same sense of pervasive dread that I had a few days ago by the lake, but I was still on edge. The last thing I wanted was to face that rotting, shadow-shrouded monster.
I don't see the demon anywhere,
Amrila whispered to me, but she already had her father's sword in one hand as she held the flashlight in the other. Since the road doesn't branch off anywhere I can see, I said as I considered our position, I'm assuming this is the only way to the Dolrath's encampment.
Yes, unless we want to cross over crags and patches of vine growth.
It would probably be best to investigate whatever happened up there, I thought out loud. If we're going to get the Dolrath on our side, bringing back some proof of recent attacks might help convince them.
So, do we continue down the road?
Amrila asked. Yeah, I decided. If the demon shows up, we'll ward it off with the lights and book it east toward the encampment.
Following you then, partner,
Amrila said with a nod. Keep an eye on our backs, I said, and I started forward toward the still figures on the road ahead. As we came closer, I could see they were all night elves dressed in a kind of dark plate armor, and once I was standing over them, I saw the armor appeared to be made from the shells of the giant beetles. Sections of carapace were attached to the black and brown leather to make a flexible sort of armor plating, but these bodies had also been mutilated. Just like the gnomes, these soldiers had their faces torn away from their skulls and limbs ripped from their bodies, and there were pools of blood soaking into the dirt of the road. The biggest difference was these elves had been heavily armed, but their swords and crossbows scattered on the ground around them. But there were no signs of the attackers. I looked around for footprints or a weapon that didn't match those of the night elves, but there was nothing. Thankfully, there was also still no sign of the shadow demon. What do you think? I asked Amrila. You know these people?
These are Dolrath warriors,
Amrila replied as she looked around at the mangled bodies.
I don't understand how one lesser demon could beat 6 of them.
Should we take one or two of these swords or something to show the Dolrath? I asked. Bring some proof of what we're saying is true?
We should search their pockets too,
the horned woman offered in a bright tone. I lowered my head and looked at the Zinkari from under skeptical eyebrows.
What?
She asked with an innocent shrug. We're not looting these bodies, I said in a firm tone. We want to ally ourselves with these people, and looting the bodies of their warriors might mess up the deal.
Who said anything about looting?
Amrila said with mock sweetness. I narrowed my eyes on her and smirked.
All right!
The horned woman threw her hands up.
I promise not to loot these elves.
With that, the Zinkari woman and I crouched down and started to search the bodies for anything that could identify the warriors, or clues as to what had happened. It was grisly work, and the only thing we found in the end was a pendant with a silver charm that looked like an arrow hanging from it. I put it in my pocket, where I also had the cloak pin I'd found at the lake, but nothing else seemed significant, so we decided to leave the bodies as they were and tell the chief at the encampment where they were. As we traveled east, the road forked, and the terrain began to change. The rocky landscape of the cavern started to show more life, and I heard the sound of flowing water nearby. There were small plants and larger growths of the spiked vines, but here the vines seemed to be cultivated and made natural barriers along the road. The further east the horned woman and I went, the more of the gloom mushrooms we saw too.
We should probably turn off the lights,
Amrila said as we paused to drink some water and rest. We were sitting on the ground, just off the road with our canteens and a bag of jerky open between us.
This area is more populated. I don't think the lesser demon would come this far east, and I don't know if we should draw a great deal of attention to ourselves. You look strange enough.
Strange? I teased as I offered the Zinkari woman a winning smile.
Strange is not bad.
The horned woman smiled back, with her sharp canines just peeking out from under her full upper lip.
It's just strange. Which brings up a question. What are we going to tell the Dalrath you are? They're bound to ask.
Grok didn't ask, I replied with a shrug.
Grok runs a remote inn where criminals and prostitutes are his regulars.
Amrila giggled.
His living depends on not asking questions. But those posters Ursinger has circulated claim you're a vampire.
How bad is that? I asked as I selected a piece of jerky. My frame of reference for vampires were from women I dated in college and high school, and they seemed pretty keen on the brooding bloodsuckers.
They are horrible, smelly monsters that eat people,
the red-skinned woman said blandly.
Generally things that are frowned on in a civilized society.
Well, I snorted, unless my body odor is way worse than anyone is telling me, I don't think they'll mistake me for a vampire. Is there anything else I can pass as? Amrila leaned back and looked me up and down, and the corners of her mouth twitched upward ever so slightly.
Maybe Zinkari?
She mused.
We all look different, but really you look like a gnome who didn't know when to stop growing. You're so tall, it would be hard to believe you're from the gloom at all, but...
The black-eyed woman paused, tilted her head, and slightly touched her fingers to her pouty lips as she thought. But what? I prompted.
You could almost pass as a goblin,
she said finally. What? I replied in shock as I bit down on some jerky. Aren't goblins all gross little green guys with sharp teeth and arms that go past their knees?
Some of the lower orders look something like that.
Amrila snickered as she playfully pulled the remainder of my piece of jerky from my hand.
But there are others, too. Some are very tall and lovely, especially the women. Your face is not as angular as a goblin's face, but the Dalrath may not know that. They don't go into the Twilight region if they can help it.
All right, I chuckled. I guess we can say I'm a goblin, but if they don't ask, let's not offer any information.
Eddie Hill.
Amrila said grandly.
King of the Tectris Forest Goblins.
The red-skinned woman laughed at her own joke, and even though I didn't know what the Tectris Forest was, I couldn't help but laugh too. But my laughter stopped short as I heard the sound of a twig snap behind me. I grabbed my galil from where it had been sitting next to me, raised it to the crook of my arm, and turned to see the surprised face of a night elf behind me. The man had deep red hair, shaved at the sides to make a short mohawk, and he was wearing the same iridescent black armor the dead elves back on the road had been. And standing behind him were 8 or 9 other soldiers, all of whom had swords or crossbows drawn. Next to me, Amrila jumped to her feet and drew her own swords. "Drop your weapons in the name of Chief Ekname, goblin!" the lead soldier with the faux hawk demanded. So much for waiting for them to ask.
Eddie?
Amrila questioned in a soft voice, and I realized the Zinkari woman wanted me to make a decision. Should we fight or surrender? The red-headed elf had said something about a chief, and that was who I'd come to speak to. If they could take me to their chief, then that was exactly what I wanted. I also didn't have any reason to fight with the Dalrath. If these were Yeni guards, I would have just shot them and asked questions later. But if I was going to get the Dol Rath chief on my side, I probably shouldn't start with fucking up his soldiers. Put your swords away, Amrila, I said in a calm, even tone as I lowered my galil. Then I held out my hands in a pacifying gesture and looked at the lead soldier. We don't mean any harm, I said as I saw the horned woman sheath her swords with a reluctant huff. That is for the chief to determine. Fohawk replied. The red-headed elf gestured with his hand, and the other guards encircled us. It was an uncomfortable feeling, being surrounded when I could easily take out every one of the beetle-shell-armored guards. But it was a risk I had to take if I was going to convince the Dol Rath to join me against Ursinger. As the group of soldiers slowly closed in to disarm us, I tried to remind myself we shared a mutual enemy in Ibsit's brother. I just needed to convince them of that fact. The group looked at our rifles with obvious confusion on their faces, and I was surprised for a moment when I noticed the Dol Rath warriors were a mix of men and women. The Yeni soldiers were exclusively men, so I guess the Dol Rath must have been a little more progressive in their thinking than Ursinger was. I am Captain Bacolth. Fohawk introduced himself, and he looked down at the Galil as he held out his hand. The red-headed elf was paying me the courtesy of allowing me to hand over my weapon instead of trying to pull it off me. I got the clear impression this was supposed to be some sign of respect, so I discreetly dropped the mag out and slid it in my pocket. And I made a show of handing Bacolth my rifle after I'd also removed the round in the chamber. The elf was extending me some trust, so I was doing the same. But in case something happened, it would be stupid to allow my weapon to fall into the wrong hands while full of ammo. Chief Ekname determines you have legitimate business here, then these will be returned to you, Goblin, the elf captain intoned. My name's Eddie, I said in as friendly of a tone as I could muster. Eddie. Bacolth repeated as his eyebrows knitted together. Goblin names are so odd, but you are very tall for a goblin. Is that why? Could be. I accepted I was now a goblin, as far as the Dol Rath were concerned, and complied with the captain's orders. Even though the Night Elf had recognized my Galil as a weapon, he didn't touch my Glock beyond a cursory inspection, so I figured the best path forward was to say as little as possible until I was in front of the chief. He took Amrila's AK and her swords, and then we were led to the Dol Rath encampment. The soldiers were careful to keep us fairly separated, so we couldn't speak along the way. But I tried to focus on looking around at the terrain and noting how the Dol Rath had figured out how to use the spiked vines as natural walls. There did seem to be an amount of agriculture, though nothing like what I had seen in Bermshire. The fields were small and rocky, and the crops were all sparse and short. When we came within sight of the encampment, the first building I saw was a tall, wooden structure that had a similar dome-like design as the buildings of Bermshire. But as we got closer, the small city of Tents came into view, though the word tents didn't do these structures justice. They were large, elaborate cloth buildings in every color imaginable, and the Dol Rath city was like a beautiful rainbow in the otherwise dark cavern. Bacolth's soldiers led us into the settlement, and I expected to be taken right away to the wooden meeting house. But the soldiers started to lead me to a long tent to one side of the meeting house. Then the other half of the soldiers broke away and began to lead Amrila somewhere else in the opposite direction. Hold up, I said as I stopped in my tracks. Where are you taking her? As soon as I stopped, the three Dol Rath around me brought their weapons up, but Bacolth just turned and placidly took in my obstinate expression and firmly planted feet.
You said on the road that you didn't mean us any harm,
Bacolth said in a mild tone. Yes, I nodded. I did.
And I chose to trust you, the captain continued. I was only as stern as my position as captain required.
But I still don't know why you detained us, I said, or where you're taking my friend.
So,
Bacolth pushed on while holding my eyes with his.
I'm asking you to trust me. No harm will come to you or your friend as long as you are in my charge. You have my word.
The captain was a strange man. There was something about his manner that seemed both accommodating and guarded at the same time. But when I looked at him in the eyes, I got the gut feeling he was telling me the truth. Then Bacolth walked through the open flaps of the tent, stood to one side, and held them open for me. I hesitated. Before I remembered, I still had my Glock on my hip, if I got any indication that the Dolrath weren't on the level, so I could afford to trust the captain a little, for now. As I walked through, I saw the front part of the tent had a low table, covered with bowls of fruit and bread, and several jugs and goblets were arranged on a metal serving tray. Around the table, there were multicolored cushions and heavy carpets, all in shades of slate blue, gold, and pale yellow. I glanced over at Bakoth, who was already pouring what looked like a deep red wine from one of the jugs into a couple of glasses. "I thought we were going to see the chief," I said in a confused tone.
"The messenger will have already been dispatched to let the chief know you're here,"
the red-headed elf said as he took a sip from his goblet.
"But she is a very busy woman. Ekname cannot just drop everything to see why a goblin has come to her realm, even if he claims to be the king of the Tektris Forest."
"How long were you listening to my conversation before I noticed you?" I asked with a raised eyebrow.
"Not long,"
the captain replied.
"Are you hungry?"
"Sure," I shrugged. I was treated very well while I waited for the chief to see me, but all the while my mind churned. I'd been surprised by Bakoth's declaration that the Dolrath chief was a woman. It felt like it went against everything I knew about Night Elf culture. But then again, Ibsith was my main source of knowledge on the subject, and she'd been woefully sheltered. So I wondered how much each tribe differed from the others. I was given water and food and taken back behind the partition that divided the tent, where there was a steaming bath. By bath, I really meant a small wooden tub filled with hot water I hoped was fresh. When I sat in the tub, my knees folded up to my chin, and it was clear it had been built for the small people of the gloom. But the hot water still felt good. After I'd bathed, a female servant gave me a change of clothes made from a soft, cotton-like fabric and dyed in a similar color scheme to the tent. I had to ask the young serving woman how to put on the shirt, which wrapped around the body and tied together in several places. The pretty night elf girl giggled and showed me the correct way to wear the shirt. Then I was led back into the front of the tent, where Bakoth was lounging and idly eating from a bowl of fruit. When I came from around the partition, the red-headed elf stood and looked me up and down.
"It suits you, goblin,"
he said with a wry smile. "Thanks," I replied as I adjusted the unfamiliar clothes. "But my name's Eddie."
"This way, goblin Eddie,"
the captain continued and ignored me.
"Ekname is ready to see you now."